Money Talk.
This is Akashwani. In the program Money Talk, now we bring you a discussion on key provisions of the Foreign Contribution Regulation Amendment Bill 2026. The participants are Sharad Kohli, Economic Analyst, and Gaura Dhawanlal, Anchor.
Mr. Kohli, welcome to the program. We'd like to begin actually with, you know, just taking a little step back and just a little context. The inflow of funds into countries, various countries across the world, developed and developing, for social, political and religious causes has been an important source for many organizations. What were the challenges with the existing provisions of the existing bill that a revision was required?
So, good evening to the listeners of Akashwani. You know, when the bill was enacted initially in 1976, I'm dating back to the original bill. So the bill was quite friendly and there were genuine donations coming into the country. And as the time flow passed, with the flux of time, we found that the organizations and institutions, some of them, not all of them, they started misusing. The funds were coming for purpose A, they were being used for purpose B. The funds were coming for originating, shall I say, for legitimate purpose. But then on hitting the account here and at the time of appropriation of funds, they were being used for illegitimate purposes or undesignated purposes, not for the intended purposes for which they were being sent from abroad. So that was one. Of course, then there were agencies and institutions who were working against the interests of the country overseas. So they started sending funds. Of course, the recipients of funds were also hand in glove with them. It was being observed that the funds were being received for either change of religion or for other purposes which were against the interests of the company. So it was thought in 2010 to replace the Act of 1976, which was a replacement. Then, of course, a proposed amendment was made in 2020. And then the final amendment, which is now under discussion, which is supposed to be discussed in the parliament. So basically, the intention of the person sending the funds and the intention of person receiving the funds here have to be on the same page. And we should not forget that every institution who sends funds from there and the institution or the person who receives funds in India, they have to be registered with the Ministry of Home Affairs, which is a kind of a license issued to the person over here or to the institution over here to use the funds for the declared purposes. Now, ever after the government and the authorities and the regulatory authorities started observing that the funds are being misused, the funds are not being applied for the purposes intended, of course, there was a need for what is being done. And the principal reason, Gaura, I would say, why this amendment bill has been presented, because if you look at the history of FCRA and if you look at the history of institutions which were registered all this while, so there were cases of institutions whose licenses were cancelled, or shall I say, let me use the word registration, whose registration were cancelled, expired, suspended for various reasons. Now, if you understand this mechanics, that when the funds move in, you know, the funds are applied. Let's say funds are used for creating certain assets in the country. Let's say the asset is a building or asset is a facility which is being created for a certain community and so on and so forth. Now, once the asset is created and thereafter, when the license or the registration is cancelled, the asset, the government did not have any authority over the asset, because once the institution stops functioning under that license, asset created is forever. And it was being observed that the assets continued to be used for the purposes which were not in the interest of the country many a times. So there was this need to give powers to the government, to give powers to the regulatory authorities, to the authorities that, you know, once license has been cancelled, suspended, expired, you know, the assets created out of that should also not be used, because that goes against the intent of the whole promulgation, that once you're registering an institution for the purpose and institution's registration has expired, whereas the asset continues to be used. So I think this is the crux of the amendment which is being made.
Right. So, Mr. Kohli, what we're hearing you say is that the law is best understood as a registration and disclosure regime for foreign directed activity. It's not a permission to exist regime for civil society, because there are many countries, you know, like the United States, Australia, the United Kingdom and Canada, all of them have accountability and transparency rules for foreign funding in place. And India is actually listening to certain international protocols with, I think, a strong lens on domestic concerns. And that's the reason such more accountability and stringency is being brought in.
Absolutely. If you understand the whole mechanism of funds coming into the country, you're right. Absolutely. Australia, most of the developed countries, they've got very stringent regulations on the character of funds coming into their country. If you look at India, you know, how can an institution bring funds in India? Take, for example, a corporate. A corporate can bring funds either as revenue, you earn revenue, or or you can probably bring it as a share participation. That is when a foreign investor or an institution wants to buy your shares. The third case could be where you're borrowing, which is called the external commercial borrowing. So it's only one of the three ways. Any other way, a company cannot bring funds into India. Now, when we're talking of institutions, I'm including a corporate body, a non-corporate body, which is in India, we call them as NGOs, the non-government organizations. Now, these NGOs are not corporate bodies, although there is a particular corporate body which can also act as an NGO. But for a moment, let me assume that an NGO is separate and completely different from a company. Now, an NGO can bring funds into the country via donations. That is when a foreign institution says that we want to participate in a philanthropic activity in the country. Let's say you want to uplift children coming from the poorer classes. You want to probably, as I said, uplift a village. You want to work for a backward area which needs a little bit of development, where a foreign institution comes forward. That's fine. And which has been happening. I won't say that all the money coming into this country via the FCRA registration is bad money. I mean, no. And if you look at the total number of registrations cancelled and registrations expired, there are only 28% of the NGOs in this country which are actively working now. The rest of the 72% licenses or registrations have been cancelled. And why have they been cancelled? Some of them may have finished the task which they came for. Maybe their task is over and there's no more donation required. But there could be many who were probably trying to divert the funds. Now, another accusation was that funds were being diverted from one organization to the other. So there was a kind of a local money laundering. That money comes here and then it is tossed on for the benefit of another organization, or it was also fine, Gaurav, that funds were being used for personal purposes. They were not being used. So, you know, when fund comes here, when an organization goes and seeks registration, you are supposed to be declaring that this is the purpose of the fund, this is the intention, this is the quantum of funds I'm expecting, and this is the purpose for which these funds are going to be applied. Now, obviously, there is a mechanism in place for the government to check as to what purpose the funds have been used. So the moment it is found that the funds were not being used for the intended purposes, the government has a right to cancel, suspend the license. Now, as I said, the main issue was that the asset created out of those funds was beyond the purview. And now, of course, government, after this amendment, would have the power to probably take over the asset, manage that asset. If this asset is a religious institution, for example, this asset is a religious building or something, then it will be carried on in the same spirit. And, you know, there's another interesting proposal in the FCRAs, which I'm sure the NGOs would be probably relishing, is that if it is found that there is part usage of the funds in that asset, and part usage is, say, by a local contributor, then only to that extent your asset lien would be there. And you can always claim it back once you prove to the government, to the authority, that, okay, the intention wasn't bad, and so you're able to submit the details, you're able to make the whole process very transparent. I think the registration is also restored. There have been cases, Gaurav, where the registrations of a lot of institutions, after being questioned, they have been restored. They've been found to be absolutely fine. So I don't think a genuine institution needs to be worried about this amendment. Only institutions who would be worried would be probably who've got sinister intentions. And I'm very clear on that, Gaurav.
So when we allowed funds to come in, you know, historically, when we look at it, and we felt that, yes, intent was good, and there are so many areas where this money with good intent can be put into. And over the years, checks and balances, it was found that there were leakages, there were misuse, misappropriation and leakages in the system, and hence more stringent measures were brought in. The civil service society, and there are many organizations which are now raising a hue and cry, I think, to help us understand, and as you said, that if you're doing legitimate, sincere work and it's going towards the upliftment of whichever category that you want to work in, subject of course to the interpretation that it should have a general interpretation. You should not look at upliftment in with different color and, you know, spectacles, because it should have meaning for the country. When we talk of national interest, what does that cover? Because that's a big term, and that's actually, you know, it's a kind of a lens that can be put on many things to say, okay, this is not a national interest. So any guidelines on that?
Everything, first of all, Gaurav, should be within the four walls of the Constitution, first of all. If you're looking at, you know, switching religions, if you're looking at some kind of directly or indirectly being involved with terrorist activities, if you're looking at funding powers or funding people or funding a group, or funding a handful of people who want to work against the interest of the country.
Right. So when we talk of, you know, that there are certain areas, people or activities, or there's a list that cannot B, I don't think they're eligible to receive these contributions. And those, of course, are organizations which work in constitutional areas, or people, or even public servants have been put into that category. And I think certain checks and balances to any way not allow certain sacred institutions or places which actually uphold the sovereignty of the country, it's already existing. And it's where the interpretation is a little gray, is where the government would want to make it more stringent.
Absolutely. You know, Gaurav, if we understand this, we are a secular state. All religions here survive with harmony. There is no restriction imposed on anyone to practice your own religion. So anything which is coming for a religion, so far it remains for the religion, it's fine. So that has been the case. Practicing your own religion, as I said, one of the proposals in the amendment, Gaurav, says that if you've created an asset, which is, let's say, a place of worship, a place of religious worship of any religion, then even after the takeover, that the government takes over that asset after cancellation of the registration, the institution continued to function. I mean, there is no stoppage of practicing of the religion, just that the activities being carried out under the garb of these religious institutions, which work against the country, or which, as I said, work on switching somebody's religion or taking out a person from a religion and trying to counsel the person to join another religion and so on and so, I think that is a barred activity. And this, I think institutions would have to understand. I mean, I have been, Gaurav, involved with FCRA for a very long time, let's say almost been 30 years. And my experience says that any genuine institution which is wanting to contribute for philanthropic purposes in our country, and this applies to all the countries for that matter, no government is going to stop you. But then once the funds have landed, it becomes moral responsibility of the recipient, whether recipient is an institution or recipient is a person or is a group of persons. It is your moral responsibility to ensure that there is complete transparency in the way you are trying to use the funds. And whatever you've declared to the registering authorities, that this is the purpose for which funds are coming, the funds should not be for any other purpose. And, all the cases where registrations have been cancelled or they've been suspended, it was found that, or they were not renewed for that matter, it was found that the funds were not appropriately used for the declared purposes. So if you don't do something which you are declaring, obviously the registering authority has a right to cancel the registration.
Absolutely.
And the worst is when you create an asset out of those funds. And what happens to that asset? Your registration is cancelled, but asset remains. There are dozens of examples, Gaurav, in this country where assets have been created of suspended registration institutions where the funds have come. So their government had no power to take over those assets or liquidate those assets. I think this amendment principally focuses at that area.
Right. Coming back to, investigation or penal action, and we have, of course, at the center, we have authorizations and there are state organizations and state-level investigations also. So is there some kind of a check and balance where, say, because, somebody could say, oh, it's a witch hunt in my state because the government is like that. So is there some kind of a check on the pulse that the central government also keeps to say, okay, you need to speak with us also and tell us why you want to investigate them?
No, because once an investigation happens, the investigation happens under the supervision of Ministry of Home Affairs. We know that very well. And, you are supposed to be submitting, as an institution, you are supposed to be submitting a statement of application of funds to the government from time to time basis. You have to submit. And if it is found, then obviously government has got a right to check. I mean, if you say that I have, for example, uplifted the standard of living of this village and I have made wells there, I have made schools and so on and so forth. There have been cases earlier. Then, a physical investigation is carried out, that how many schools were built, how many shelters were built in a particular village, well, a water supply, you said you facilitated in water supply in the houses, then how much of water supply was done. So I think investigating authorities have a right to find out that simple declaration is not enough. We can go on the ground to check if this is actually being done. So checks and balances for this kind of activity have to be there. I mean, there's no doubt about that, Gaurav. I mean, let's say if $100,000 comes, probably it was found that $50,000 was used for the declared activities and the remaining $50,000 was diverted to another institution, which was not part of your declaration. So I think investigation is very thorough. In fact, punishment has been softened. There was a punishment of 5 years in the proposed amendment. It is now being brought down to 1 year, where investigation concludes that the person is guilty of misusing the funds.
Basically reinforcing that if the intent is clear, the result must speak to the intent, and that's how it should come across. So transparency, accountability, sovereignty, keeping all this in mind will help boost public confidence. Thank you so much.
You are listening to a discussion on key provisions of the Foreign Contribution Regulation Amendment Bill 2026. The participants were Sharad Kohli, economic analyst, and Gaurav Dhawanlal, anchor. This program was produced and presented by the News Services Division of Akashvani.
Money Talk.